All right, Tabo, say good morning. A lot to do today. So today's daf is Pei Zayin. We are picking up at the Mishnah on Pei Vav Amud Beis. Says the Mishnah, Kasav la neder ushvo in li alayach. So we'll say, remember, actually the Gemara alluded to this Mishnah yesterday. If a man writes to his wife that I am freeing you, I am exempting you from any neder and shvua, meaning that I am essentially relinquishing my right to impose upon you any kind of neder or shvua, in yachol hashpia, so he's not permitted to go ahead and impose an oath on her. Ava mashpia who is your shell, v'asabayim b'shusa, but if let's say she dies and her heirs want to come to collect the ksuba, or let's say she sold the ksuva and others are coming in her place, so to them the husband is permitted to impose a shvua. Neder ushvua imi alayach val yor shayech val abayim b'shuseich. But if he says, I exempt you from a neder as well as on your inheritors or anyone who comes in your stead, then imi yachol ashpia lo hi v'lo yor shayech v'lo as abayim b'shusa, then he's not permitted to go ahead and administer an oath to her, to her heirs, or to anyone else who comes in her stead. Aval Yorshav Mashbiyin Oso. Excuse me. Aval Yorshav Mashbiyin Oso V'est Yorshav Esbayim B'Shusa. But his inheritors are permitted to go ahead and administer an oath to either her inheritors or to anyone who comes in her stead. Ein li V'lo li Yorshai V'lo L'Boyim B'Shusi Alayech V'al Yorshayech V'al Abayim B'Shuseich. So we'll say, let's say he writes the following statement. I and my heirs or anyone else who comes in my stead does not have the ability to administer an oath to you, to your heirs, or to anyone who comes in your stead. Eino yochol lashpia, lo hu, v'lo yarshav, v'lo habayim b'shusa. So neither he, nor his inheritors, nor anyone who comes in his place, are not permitted to administer an oath. Lo osa, not to her, lo liyarsheha, her heirs, v'lo habayim b'shusa. Or anyone ultimately, again, who comes in her stead. Halcha mikevra baila lebeis avia. We'll say if she went from her husband's grave to her father's home, which is another way of saying she went from the Levaya back to her father's home, or she went back to her father-in-law's home after the Levaya, below Naasis Apotropia, and she never became an apotropist, meaning she never got involved in the financial matters of the estate. Ein hayarshim mashpiyin osa. The yarshim do not have the right to go ahead and administer an oath to her. V'im Naasis Apotropia, but if she became an apotropist, Hayorshim mashpiyin osa ala asid lamo. The yorshim are able to go and administer an oath upon her going forward, meaning for anything, because now she's the apotropos of the estate. Ve'in mashpiyin osa ala shavar, but they may not go ahead and administer an oath upon her for that which occurred in the past. Says the Gemara Shvua Mayavidite. So what are we talking about? Meaning when the Gemara says over here that the husband exempts her from a shvua, what kind of shvua are we talking about? Amrav Yehuda Marav, top of Pei Zayin. We're talking about, again, that Rav Elsa, if he, remember we saw this yesterday, that if the husband goes ahead and appoints his wife as an apotropos over the estate, he has the ability to make her take a shvuah in this, that she's not stealing anything. But remember, that's not unique to marriage. That's true in any case where someone's running your business. So the halacha gives the employer, the business owner, the right to impose a shvuah at will upon the person running his business. By the way, this is a good thing. It's a good thing because it keeps the apotropos, it keeps the person running the business, honest. If a person knows that at any moment the Baal could go ahead and administer an oath, person knows, under the microscope. So we're talking about over here about a husband who appointed his wife to be an apotropos while he was still alive. And therefore, again, what he's writing over here is that Lamaisa, even though he's saying to his wife, no, appointing you as the apotropos, I am hereby exempting you from any type of shua. Now remember, why would a husband do this? We saw this yesterday, because a wife would say, I'm uncomfortable living under the microscope like that. I'm your wife, you're asking me to help out with the business, I'm doing so. But I'm not comfortable always being subject to shvuah. So therefore he writes to her, I'm exempting you from shvuah. That's the first opinion. Rav Nachman Amar Rava Baravua, ala pogemes ksuvasa. Oh no, so Rav Nachman says it's a different case. And listen, now we're going to see this actually in the next Mishnah. Pogemes ksuva is a woman who claims that she received partial payment on her ksuva. So we will see in the next Mishnah that if she claims that she receives partial payment on the ksuva, so Aloch Lamaisa, she has to take a shvuah in order to claim the rest. Rav Nachman is suggesting that the case in the Mishnah is where he says that even if you claim that you receive partial payment on the ksuva, I am exempting you from shvuah in order to collect the rest. Azal Rav Mordechai, Amr Lishmai Tekamed Rav Ashi. So Mordechai went and he said over this ruling in front of Rav Ashi. So Bishlom Lamanda, Amr Alapol Gemes, Ksuvasa, Demaska Adaita, Dilma Mats Mitstarchili Zuzi, Vishakilna Miksuvasai. Now, so it makes sense according to the one who says that we're dealing with the case of a woman who received partial payment of the Ksuva. Because most like sometimes a woman, will require some extra money for something, and she could ask her husband for an advance on the ksuba. That could definitely happen. And therefore what? But Amrale ksovli to lo mishtavisli. And she says to her husband, I want you to put in writing that she will not go ahead and, make me take a shiva in order to collect the rest. El lamando amar, because the Rosh said, meaning that's a matsui case. A case like that could happen. El lamando amar ala petropia shenasas bechaye baila. But Rabosai, if we're talking about a situation where lemaisa, he's exempting her. If she becomes an apotropis on his estate, he is exempting her from having to take an apotropis shvua. So the Gemara says, "Ihi mihavis yada the most of the apotropia." Does she know that he's going to appoint her as an apotropis? The amralik sov li delo mishabisli, that he could write for her proactively, or that she could say to him, "Write for me that you will not make me take an oath." As well as what the Gemara is suggesting is the following: a case like this, where a husband is proactively exempting his wife in shvua, but very often this could happen at the beginning of a marriage. So at the beginning of a marriage, I understand a woman might know that she may want a ksuva advance at some point in time. And so she says to her husband, I want you to write down now that you're exempting me from shavua in order to go. And that way I know that if I need to take a little bit of an advance payment on my ksuva, you're not going to make me take a shavua to collect the rest at the end of the day. But how does a woman know that one day her husband's going to appoint her as apotropis over the estate, that she asks him now to commit in writing that you're exempting me from shavua? Amar Leis, he said to him, Ason aha masnisula. You're understanding this as going on one part of the Mishnah, Anan aha masanin Allah. We actually learned this, that this is referring to the last part of the Mishnah, Ha chami kever by beis aviha. If a woman went from the levaya of her husband to the home of her father, Osha chazul beis chameha, velo nasis apotropia, or for that matter, she went back to her father-in-law. So it doesn't matter whose home she's going back to. What matters is that she's not involving herself in the affairs of the estate. She's not becoming an apotropis. Ein hayarshin mashpian osa. So the yarshim cannot go ahead and make her take an oath. They can't make her take an oath. The imnasis apotropia, but if she became an apotropis for the estate, then what? Yershin mashpien osa ala asid lavo. The in mashpien osa al sha'avar. They may go ahead and they are permitted to make her take an oath going forward. Meaning, Rabosai, now the yershim are the inheritors of this property. If she is now the executor of the estate, she's running the business. Remember, husband's dead, which means that the promise that husband made not to make her take a shavua goes to the grave with him. The Yarshim are the new owners. Going forward, the Yarshim are permitted to go ahead and tell her, you must take an oath when we desire. However, ve'in mashmin osa al sha'avar. But Rabosei, they can't go ahead and make her take a shavua on the past. Al sha'avar, right? Excuse me, sha'avar, my avidite. Now, what does that mean? They can't make her take a shvua in the past. What the Gemara is asking over here is two questions. If you look at Rashi, it's actually right across. Sha'avar my avidite. Kolomar ad masai kari the sha'avar the lo amina nichse diyasmininu ve'in tnai shalom u'abar. So we'll say here's what's happening. Husband made an agreement during his lifetime that he's not going to impose a shvua upon his wife. And now we're assuming right now it's about a shvua sapatropis, right? Not going to make her take a shvua. Now here's what we know. When he dies, that shvua goes with him. The shayla is, from what point and time forward are the yisomim permitted to make her take a shvua? So that's the one wants to know. Because the Mishnah said that they can make her take a shvua going forward, but they can't make her take a shvua on the past. Halachically, what constitutes the past? Maya vidite. Amrav Yehuda Amarav. This is talking about an apotropis, that she was appointed as an apotropis while her husband was still alive. So you know what it means? Past means when husband was still alive. But once husband dies, the Yarshim have the ability to make her take a shvua about any of her dealings and any of her transactions with the property of the estate. So between death and burial already, meaning another, it's another way of saying, from the moment that the husband dies, the past is done, the agreement is done, and from the moment that he dies, the Yarshim can make her take a shvua about her business dealings with the estate. Rav Masna, Rav Masna says, no, afilu bein misa l'kvur lo mashvin lo. It's not true. Even between death and burial, that's still called avar, that's still called the past, and they can't make her take a shvuah about her business transaction during that time. Do amri nardoi, because the nardoim say, lekarga ulemezoni ulekvura, mazbinon below askarta. But it's very interesting. So the nardoi say that you could sell off, property of an estate to pay her. But say karga is head tax, mezoni is mezonos for a wife and for daughters and for orphans, and kvura means burial. You could sell off state property, Yarshin's property, without an announcement. And I will say, now this is interesting, we'll see this later on, that the halacha is that before you go ahead and you sell property, of Yisomim, so the halacha is you have to announce the sale for a certain amount of time. The reason for that is why? In order to encourage the interest of buyers. Because remember, again, if you sell something quickly, you don't give enough time to be able to get the word out. So this is what Gemara discusses, that you have to announce the sale of the property for X amount of time before the actual sale takes place, in order to get the best deal for the Yisomim. But however, there are certain exceptions to this, which means if you have to pay off your head tax to the king, or if you have to go ahead and you have to sell off for mezonos, or you have to pay for a levaya, in all of these cases, you are permitted to sell off property without prior announcement. So I will say, so what do you see from here? You see that the woman has to be given certain rights to transact with the property of the estate in order to provide for the needs of her husband's burial. So because of that, Rabbi Ami suggests that, Rav Masna. Rav Masna suggests that therefore, halacha lemaisa, there is no, the period under from which her, say differently, the time from which she is subject to the shavua for her transactions with the estate is only after the burial of her husband. But anything prior to the burial, she is exempted under the agreement that her husband made with her, not to subject her to any shavua. Amrabchia, dilo nader udalo shavua. We'll say another case now. Rabbi said, Amrabchia, dilo nader udalo shavua. Who is, so we'll say, let's say he says to his wife the following, he writes to his wife the following, I will not subject you to any nader, I will not subject you to any shvuah. Rashi says, in kasav la'lashon zeh, right? I'm not going to impose on you any neder in your shvuah. Who in the yachal hashbiya? He is not permitted to impose upon her a shvuah. Aval yarshav mashbiyin oso. But his heirs may. So meaning when he dies and his heirs inherit the estate, they are permitted to go ahead and impose an oath upon her. Naki neder, naki shvuah. This is interesting. Let's say you use lashon ever. You are cleansed from a neder. You are cleansed from a shvuah. Then what's the halacha? Says Rabbi Chiya. Both he and his heirs are not permitted to go ahead and give her an oath. Why? This is what the husband really means to say to her. Mankis mishvu asa. I am literally cleansing you from shvuas. What he's doing over here in this case is he's saying to her that you are absolutely absolved from any shvuah or any neder with anything to do with this particular property, anything to do with this estate. Rav Yosef, says, Rav Yosef, Rav Chiya, delo neder delu shvuah, hu eni achal hashpia, val yarshin mashpien osa. So we'll say another version now. If he says, lo neder, lo shvuah, he writes this. Then what? Then neither he, then he can't give her, he can't impose a shvuah, but his inheritors may. Naki neder, naki shvuah. But again, if he says you are cleansed from a neder, cleansed from a shvuah, then what? Bein hu u bein yershin mashbiyin osa. This is very interesting. So in this version of Rav Yosef, if he says naki neder, naki shvuah, both he and his heirs are permitted to impose a shvuah. What's the pshat? Hachi kamerla, naki nafsheich b'shvuasa. What he's saying to her is, cleanse yourself with the shvuah. In other words, go ahead and clear up any ambiguity or any difficulty by taking the shvuah. Next case. Naki nafsheich b'shvuasa. I'm sorry. Shalach Rav Zakkai lemar ukva. So Rav Zakkai sent to Mar Ukva. Bein de lo shvuah, bein de naki shvuah. Whether he said to her, lo shvuah or naki shvuah. Whether he used either of those phraseologies. Bein de lo neder, bein de naki neder. Whether he said, no, I'm not going to impose a neder on you, or you should be cleansed from the neder. If he said, b'nechasai, if he said, in my property, I am cleansing you or exempting you from a neder for a shvuah from my property, then what? Hu eni yochal hashpia. Then he is not permitted to go and impose a neder upon her. However, aval yarshin mashpien osa. But Rabbo say his inheritors may. Why? Because since he's using the lashon of my property, what he's saying is, as long as this property is mine, you are exempted from a shvuah or a neder. But once that property becomes what? Becomes someone else's, i.e. my yershim, they are permitted to impose a shvuah upon you. But if he just says, you're exempted from a shvuah, from a neder, from this property, then what? Then what he's saying is, that both he and his heirs are not permitted to go ahead and make or take a shvuah. Amr Rab Nachman, Amr Shmuel. So Rab Nachman said, name is Shmuel. Mishum Abba Shaul ben Ima Miriam. In the name of Abba Shaul, the son of Ima Miriam. Bein de lo shvua, bein de naki shvua. Whether he said lo shvua or naki shvua. Bein de lo neder, bein de naki neder. Whether he said, I'm not giving you a neder, or you should be cleansed from a neder. Bein minachasai, bein minachsachia ilain. Whether he said from my property or from this property. Bein hu, u bein yorshav, ein mashpien osa. So in this case, Abba Shaul said the name of Ima Miriam. Whenever he makes a lashon of I'm exempting you from a shvuah, so we interpret that to mean that he's exempting her in totality from any shvuah to do with this property. Whether he owns the property, whether his yarshim owns the property, then she's exempt. But what am I supposed to do? Because the chachamim said what? The chachamim put down, see, even though this is the halacha, that whenever you exempt her from a shvuah, you're exempting her from everything. You're exempting her from when it's your property, from the yisomim. You can't give her a shvuah, yisomim can't give her a shvuah. But what could I do? The chachamim were very strict when it comes to anyone who wants to take property from yisomim. And the halacha is that if you want to take property from an estate owned by yisomim, what must you do? You must go ahead and take a shvuah. The ikad amri la mas nisa. Others interpret this as a braisa. Abba Shaul ben Ima Miriam Amar. Abba Shaul ben Miriam said, Abba Shaul ben Ima Miriam Amar, Bein delo shvuah, Bein denaki shvuah, Bein delo neder, Bein naki neder, Bein minichse, Bein minichsachya ilain. So Rabbi said, whatever you said, right? I'm exempting you from neder, I'm cleansing you from neder, my property, the property, in all of these cases, Bein hu'u, Bein yarshav, Ein mashbien osa. Rabbi said, now in this case over here, so therefore what? He's given up the right to administer a shvuah. And that right is given up both for him as well as for his heirs. But what could I do? But what am I supposed to do? Because Chazal said that you can't collect from the property of Yisum without taking a shvuah. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shaul, halacha keben Ima Miriam. The halacha follows the son of Ima Miriam, meaning the halacha follows Abba Shaul. And I both say, this indeed is the halacha, that Lamaisa, again, when he uses this lashon of, right, lo shvuah, lo neder, inaki mishvuah, inaki mineder, nechasai, nechasai, nechasai ilin, whatever lashon he uses, his intention is to free her from all oaths concerning this property. And that exemption, meaning, and that's true, he can't administer an oath, his inheritors can't administer an oath, but lamaisa, again, lamaisa, at the end of the day, Chazal still instituted a blanket rule, and that blanket rule is, you can't collect from property of Yisomim without a Shavua. And all of that was done in order to safeguard the property of Yisomim. Also, remember, we learned this before. Because since Yisomim often are not versed in the business dealings of their father, someone shows up and says, the deceased father owes me this, owes me that. They don't necessarily know. Therefore, the only way to really protect them is to ensure that the only way you could collect from that property is to do so with a Shavua. Says the Mishnah, Hapogemes Ksuvah, so that's another interesting case. So Hapogemes Ksuvah, so we'll see what this case means in just a moment. So if a woman is Pogim her Ksuvah, Lo Sifra Ela B'Shvuah, she can only collect with a Shvuah. Eid Echad Mi'ida Shipuruah. Similarly, again, if you have an Eid Echad that testified that the Ksuvah was already paid, Lo Sifra Ela B'Shvuah, she can only collect the Ksuvah with a Shvuah. Minichse Yisomim U'minichase Mishubadim. If she wants to collect her Ksuvah from the property of Yisomim or from encumbered, from sold property, v'shalo b'fanav, or if he's not present, in all of these cases, lo sifra ela b'shvuah, you can only collect with a shvuah. So now the Mishnah is going to explain each of these cases. Hapogemes ksuvas ha-ketzad. What is the case of Hapogemes ksuva? Ha'isa ksuvas ha-alef zoz. She had a very large ksuva of 1,000 zoz. V'amra la hiskabat ksuva sayich. And the husband claims, I paid you your ksuva already. V'hi omeres lo hiskabalti ela maneh. And she says, no, you paid me a money, right? You paid a money is 100 zuz, you paid me 100 zuz, but there's still another 900 zuz that you owe me. So what's the halacha? Lo sifra ela b'shvua. Boaz says she can only collect the other 900 zuz if what? If she takes a shvua, then indeed she is still owed that money. Eid echad, mother mitzvahs, correct. Eid echad mi'ida shehi perua. So what happens if you have an eid echad that testified that the ksuva was paid? So what's the case? Ketzad, ha'isik ksuvasa elav zoz. Same thing, her ksuva was 1,000 zoz. Va'amrala hiskabat ksuvasayich. Ksuvasayich, and the husband claims, you received, I paid you. Vehi omeres lo hiskabalti, she said, I didn't get, Rosa is different. In this case, she's saying, I didn't get anything. However, again, the eid echad mi'ida shi perua. But you have an eid echad who says, no, you did receive the money. So what's the halacha? Lo sifra ella b'shvua. She could only collect with the shvua. That's the second case. Third case. Min nechasim mishubadim. Kate said, what's the case of where she's collected from nechasim mishubadim? Machar nechasav l'achirim. So she's married to a man. And over the course of the marriage, he went ahead and sold off his property. Now he dies, or he divorces her. He has no property left. So she wants to collect from the sold properties. So Rabbi says she has the right to go and collect from properties that were sold after the date of the marriage. She can only collect with a shvua. So what's the case of nechse yisomim? May's husband died and he left his property to his heirs. And she wants to collect her ksuva from now the estate of the Yisomim. Lo sifra ela b'shvua, she can only collect with the shvua. V'shelo b'fan of Ketzad, what's the case of where she wants to collect her ksuba not in his presence? Halach lo l'medina sayam. So we'll say, so what happens? He divorces her, and then he goes overseas. V'hi nifras shelo b'fan of, and she wants to collect her ksuba from his property. Ein nifras ela b'shvua, she can only collect with the shvua. Amud Beis, Rabbi Shimon says, kol zman shehi tovas ksuba sa, any time that she claims her ksuba, hayarshim mashpiyin osa, the yarshim ultimately again have the ability to impose an oath upon her. Then ino tovas ksuba sa, but if she doesn't claim her ksuba, ina yarshim mashpiyin osa, so the yarshim don't have a right to impose an oath upon her. So we'll see in the Gemara what exactly this is talking about. Says the Gemara, savar Rami bar Chama lemeimar shvua doraisa. So Rami bar Chama wanted to say that the shvua that we're referring to in the Mishnah is a biblical shvua. What's the case? The katoin masayim the kamodi libemeya havya modu b'miksa sataina v'chalamodu b'miksa sataina. Yishar Rosh Hashanah mentioned the Mishnah. That's what we'll see. Remember, we're familiar with this concept of modu b'miksa. So modu b'miksa means that if someone makes a claim and you admit to part of the claim, that partial admission triggers the need for a shvua in order to substantiate the rest of your claim. So for example, in this particular case over here, in the first case in the Mishnah, what's happening? Woman has a ksuva of 1,000 zuz. Husband claims that what? I paid you, right? I paid you. Wife says, you paid me 100. That's modu b'miksah. She admits that she received partial payment. Therefore, Rabbi Bar Chama wants to suggest that Rabbi said, because she admitted partial payment, that triggers the biblical oath of modu b'miksah. And modu b'miksah says that, again, if you admit part of the claim, you have to go ahead and take an oath regarding the rest of it. Therefore, again, Rami Bar Chama is suggesting that the oath in the Mishnah, in fact, is a shvua d'oraisa.
But that's also a migo for her, right? That strengthens her claim.
She's holding a, no, she's taking over 1,000. Oh, so good. We're going to get that. No, she's holding a document. 1,000. Good. We're going to see that. Barsha Kivanta. Good. Correct. She has a much stronger claim. She doesn't have to say anything. She could keep her mouth closed and she could just pull out her ksuva. We'll see that.
Seems like the wrong side of the mode.
Oh, so yeah. Good. Exactly. You guys are good today. Baruch Hashem. Excellent. So the Gemara says, the kamodim modim, having the hodam makes sense. Modim makes sense. Shav Amarava, Shetchuv Zarav says, truth is no. This doesn't make sense for two reasons. Chada, the chalanish boin shavatora nishba v'lom shaman. I will say this is as I just mentioned. I will say this is the opposite modim makes us. Normally, again, what a shvua does is a shvua exempts you from payment. That's normally how you think. Look at Rashi just a moment. Nishba v'lom shaman. Misha tovin also. Remember, what's the classic case of Modu B'miksas? Reuven lent me money, right? He says, I owe him the money. I said, no, I paid you back. I borrowed $1,000, I paid you back $500, I only owe you $500. So it says, what's the halacha? I'm Modu B'miksas. I admit that I owe him the money. I paid part of the claim. Therefore, the money, I have to swear about the rest. So modu b'miksas is not a vehicle to collect money. Modu b'miksas is the shvua ultimately what? To exempt you from payment. That's the biblical motive that makes us. So that's taina number one. Normally, again, when you swear in order to get you out of payment. And yet, in this case, she's swearing in order to what? In order to extract payment. Furthermore, va'od, ein nishpa'in al kfiras shibud karkos. We'll say, furthermore, another technical issue, which is what? Which let that lamaisa, we don't generate an oath based on a kfira, based on a denial of a claim that has a lien against property. In other words, both say that this is getting more technical, but the idea is whenever you have a loan that is secured by real property, so the maisa kfira or a denial of that loan does not trigger a shvua. So in this case over here, because ksuva is secured by real property, therefore again ultimately denial of that claim does not go ahead and trigger a biblical oath. So therefore both say, I want to be clear. All that's happening over here is Rava is saying, Rava is not disagreeing with the fact that there's a shvua. In this case, where a husband says, I paid your ksuva 1,000 zuz, she says, you only paid me 100. Rava is not disagreeing that the woman's going to take a shvua. Rava is just disagreeing with Rami Bar Chama's assertion that what? That this is a shvua d'oraisa. So Rava is just going to say, it's a shvua, but it's a shvua d'rabbanan. Ela amar Rava, mid d'rabbanan. Rather, Rava says, no, this is a rabbinic shvua. Why? The para daik, the mifra lo daik. Because they both say, under normal circumstances, what happens is a person who pays the money is often much more meticulous in the details of his payment. The one who is being paid is a little less meticulous in the details. And therefore, v'ramu rabbanan shvua Allah. Therefore, the rabbis imposed the shvua upon the woman. Ki heicha de tiduk, in order that she should be much more on top of the details. Tiduk, that she should be meticulous about the details as well. Because meaning, since she knows that she's going to have to take a shvua, in a case where let's say there's been partial payment of the ksuva, in order to collect the rest, she's going to have to take a shvua. The knowledge that she has to take a shvua makes her makes her desirous of being much more on top of the details. Ibay lehu, pogemes ksuvasa be'edin mahu. They will say, what happens if... Sorry?
Is there a difference between shvua d'oraisa and shvua d'rabbanan?
Yes, so see, the answer is yes. The answer is ultimately, again, there's a difference. Sometimes if hipok shvua, if you could flip the shvua onto the other party, if one party is chashad ala shvua, and also just severity of the shvua d'oraisa is going to have greater severity than the shvua d'rabbanan. So, by lo, pogemes ksuvasa be'edim mahu, the Rebbe says, so what happens if she was pogim her edim, pogim her ksuva in front of the edim. Now what does this mean? Look at Rashi. Pogim is ksuva sab edim, hiskabalti mana ubifne edim kibaltim. So Rebbe says, she's saying, I received part of my ksuva, and I received it in front of edim. So again, let's say she has a ksuva for 1,000 zuz, and she says, I received 100 zuz of my ksuva in front of edim. Mahu, what's the halacha? So Rebbe says, remember, what is the husband claiming? Husband's claiming, I paid you the entire ksuva. So maybe we could say like this: Im isa de para be'edim hava parla. So one thing I could say, in the same way that the 100 zuz was paid in front of edim, if he really paid the rest of the ksuba, it would have been done what? It would have been done in front of edim as well. The fact that there is no edus to testify that the rest of the ksuba was paid would indicate that what? That lamaisa he didn't pay it. Oh, Dilmar, perhaps on the other hand we could say isramuye isramile. Maybe the fact that he paid her the 100 zuz in front of Edim Rabosai, that's not that he went out of his way to find Edim, it just happened to be that what? That Edim were there. So since Edim were there, Lamaisa, again, he paid her in front of Edim, but he's not necessarily medactic to go out and find Edim. Tashma, kala nishpa'in shabbatar nishpa'in v'lo mashamin. Rabosai, in general, again, when you take a shvua, a biblical shvua, you take a shvua in order to exempt yourself from payment. That's the goal of a shvua. However, there are certain shvuas ve'elu nishba'in v'notlin. But these are cases where a person takes a shvua in order to what? In order to be able to collect money. What are those cases? Has sakhir. So we'll say again, remember, look at Rashi. Sakhir is all interesting cases. Sakhir. Amar lo tein li schari v'hu omer nasati. I'm working for someone. I go to my boss. I say, I'd like to get paid. My boss says, my employer says, I paid you already. So what's the halacha? The employee has the ability to take a shvua. And when he takes a shvua, he's able to get paid. Hanigzal, someone ultimately again who has property stolen from. Look at Rashi. Nigzal, ra'ua shenichnas beveso. I see someone entering my home. Amar lo tainli kelei shnatalta v'omer lo natalti va'idim roshi yotzav akilim tachas kan feitaliso v'lo yaduma. So also listen to this. So Reuven goes into my house and he comes out going ahead and carrying my crock pot. Mamish, that's very Hamish. Right, right, he's carrying my crock pot with the chullend in it. Right, so I see you carrying my crock pot. And I say, you took my crock pot. He said, what does it matter? It was my crock pot. And witnesses saw him coming out of my house. They saw him coming, holding a crock pot, but they don't know if it's his crock pot or my crock pot. So they say, what's the halacha on a case like that? I take a shvua, and I get to retrieve the item. Next, Hanechbal, the boss says someone who's injured. Rashi, Ra'ush Nichnas L'Soch Beis Ovi Yado Shalim, V'Yatza Chavol V'Amar Lo Chavalti Bi V'Amar Lo Chavalti. So it says, so I was driven, comes into my house, and when he comes into my house, he's fine, but he comes out of my house with his arm in a sling, right? And he says, you broke my arm, and I say, I didn't do anything to you. So what's the halacha? So the damaged party goes ahead and takes a shvua and gets paid for his damages. Next. We saw this in yesterday's daf, that if, let's say, someone has to swear, right? Reuven has to swear, but Reuven is chashad shvua. Reuven is known as a habitual false swear, false oath taker. So Rabbi said, we do what's called hipuch shvua. Hipuch shvua means we flip the shvua onto the other party, onto the party that has a chazaka being believable. Or next, v'chen v'ni apan kaso. This is another very interesting case. Let's say I have an arrangement. Rashi says, v'chen v'ni apan kaso. Shekosei po hakafos of kach tzivani ploni lo seis lepo'alav. V'nasati lahem v'heim omrim lo natal nu shneim l'shomen lo tumen. This is a fascinating case. Let's say I go ahead and I arrange with the local shopkeeper. I employ five people. And I say to the shopkeeper, listen, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to pay my wages in the form of wares. So my employees each earn $500. I'm giving them each a $500 tab at your store. Now listen, I want to be clear. An arrangement like this only works if the employees agree to this as well. But let's say they agree to it. So they're going to take their wages in the form of wares from the store. So I tell Ruben, just open up an account. I have five employees, $500 each, $2,500 account. So what happens? My workers come to me and they say, we never got our groceries, right? We never took our stuff. We never got it. There was nothing left. Therefore, you have to pay us. The Chenveni says, what are you talking about? I went ahead and they came to the store and they took $500 in groceries each, right? So we'll say, so what's the halacha? This is fascinating. The halacha is that the employees have to take a shvua and they extract money from the employer, and the storekeeper takes a shvua and he also extracts money from the employer. This is quite interesting. So the employer could actually end up, in this kind of case, paying out $5,000, because again, each party is taking a shvua that they never got their money. Again, we'll talk about that case a different time. V'apogim shtaro shelo be'edin. And I will say, if a person goes ahead and pogim shtaro shelo be'edin, then ultimately, again, he's claiming that he was paid part of his claim without edin. Without edin. So the Gemara on this, I will say, and I remember that whole thing was brought up for this last case. So this is a case now where someone is claiming that they received partial payment of a debt due to them, but without edim. Shalom be'edim. Now the only reason why Lemaisa, again, you'll take a shvua in this case, is because there were no edim. However, shalom be'edim in, be'edim lo. Now I will say, now what's the logic over here? What the Gemara is suggesting is like this. Person comes along and says that I received partial payment for my debt without edim. So once I sowed out Eden, therefore again, if the person wants to claim the rest, they have to go ahead and take an oath. But if they received partial payment with Eden, we could infer from that if the person who owed them the money went out of their way to pay back part of the debt with Eden, that they're going to pay back the rest with Eden also. Therefore, if there's no Eidos on the rest of the financial obligation, that means that that it hasn't been paid. So we'll say, so remember, this is a proof to our case. Because we were suggesting over here, the Gemara wanted to know, what happens if she claims that she received partial payment of her ksuba in front of Eidim? And the Eidim say, yes, we saw her that she got 100 zuz. So how do we view that? Do we say that that's a clear proof that the husband did not pay the remaining 900 zuz? Because again, if he was paying 100 zuz in front of witnesses, then what? That means he's only going to repay in front of witnesses. And the fact that there are not witnesses on the subsequent 900 zuz means that what? He didn't pay it. Or do we say, no, he didn't go out of his way to find Eidim. It just happened to be when he was paying her the 100 zuz that there were Eidim there. So he figured, you know what? Okay, witnesses, why don't you witnesses? But lav dafka that he went out of his way to find Eidim. So you see from this price of that what? That's one of the cases where a person has to take a shvua is pogim shtaro shelo be'edim, where a person received partial payment for their obligation without witnesses. Then they have to take a shvua to collect the rest. But the inference from that is that if they received partial payment with witnesses, that indicates that the person who owes them the money is only paying back with witnesses. Therefore, if there's no edos on the rest of the debt, there is no obligation to go ahead and take a shvua because the assumption is what? It has not yet been paid. To which the Gemara says, Lomi bai kamar. The Gemara says, no, Lomi bai Rabba says a stylistic idea. Lomi bai means you don't have to say this. Lomi bai be'edim devadai tzricha shvua. Rabba say, now, it goes without saying that if there was edim, Lomi bai be'edim, if the loan was paid with edim, that certainly she requires a shvua to go out and collect the rest. Look at Rashi. Devadai tzricha shvua. Alashar on the rest of the debt, daha the kamoja b'hai mana mishum edimhu the laf hashavas avedi. Because the Rebbe says she has no choice but to admit the 100 zuz that's been paid, because the ma'aseh said there's edus on it. Therefore, avashalo be'edim ema tehavi kemeshiv avedi. Rebbe says this is Howard's point. See, I would have thought that perhaps even if there's no edus, that it's like meshiv avedi. What does meshiv avedi mean? Like returning a lost object, that when she admits that she was repaid, that she was paid 100 zuz of her ksuba, it's like returning a lost object, because she doesn't have to say anything. Right? Because remember, again, in all of these cases, who has the ksuba document? She has the ksuba document. Is there anything written on the ksuba document? You know, 100 zuz received on the 12th of Iyar? There's nothing written on there. She could keep her mouth closed, and she doesn't have to say anything. So I might have thought that in a case like that, where she's admitting the fact that she did receive 100 zuz, and there are no edim, that she should be like a meshav edim, someone who's returning a lost object. I'll say that, especially a meshav edim means, if I find an object, and I could keep, and no one will know the difference, but if I go out and I return it, that's meshav avedah. So I might have thought that when she admits the 100 zuz, she's like a meshav avedah, and therefore again, v'tishko b'lo shvua, and therefore she should be able to collect the rest of the ksuva without the shvua. Kamashma Rabbo said that even in this case again, where she is admitting that she received 100 zuz, even though she didn't have to say a thing, and there is no witnesses, but once she does say something that she received 100 zuz, that triggers the need at least for a rabbinic shvua in order for her to be able to collect the remaining 900. Iboy lehu. Smaras akasha. Hapo gemes ksuva pachos pachos mishava pruta. Amar. That's another interesting case. Let's say she received partial payment of her ksuva, but halacha lemeisa, she received it pachos pachos mishava pruta, which means what? She received like less than a pruta at a time. So now, meaning over time she's received, you know, a good amount of her ksuva, we'll call it 100 zuz, but l'maisa, every single payment that she received was less than a pruta. Look at Rashi. Pachos, pachos, yishar pruta. B'manah shimo da'alav shekibla, o'sima cheshbon, kach nasati li b'yom ploni, v'kach b'yom ploni, u'mitzarfasam l'cheshbon, afi l'pachos mishar pruta. So again, so essentially she received 100, by now she received 100 zuz, but she received each little bit less than a shar pruta at a time. What's that l'cha? Now, do we say the fact that she remembers what she received on which date, that she remembers even when she received less than a shavar pruta, which means she's very meticulous in her record keeping, which means what Rabbi said, then when she says she only received 100 zuz, she's believed kushta kamra, o dilma, ira ume kama arma. Or do we say that perhaps what? That perhaps she's trying to be a little bit tricky, right? And she's trying to be a little bit deceiving by saying that she only received less than a shavar pruta at each time, and therefore it's insignificant. The Gemara says, teku. We're not sure. Iboy lehu, pocheses ksuva samahu. So we'll say, what happens if a woman diminishes her ksuva? Now listen to this. Look at Rashi. Pocheses, haisa ksuva sa elef zuz. Her ksuva was worth 1,000 zuz. Kasu b'shtar. Vehu omer hiskabalt kula. So we'll say, listen to this case. So her ksuva is worth 1,000 zuz. He claims that I paid you the entire ksuva. Vehi omer slo hiskabalt iklom. Ava modani shlo hisneis imi l'ksuva elamara. We'll say, listen to this. This is an amazing case. She has a ksuva document that says that her ksuva is 1,000 zuz. He claims, I paid you. She claims you didn't pay me. But I'll tell you what, if you remember, even the Ksuva says 1,000 zuz, you and I made an agreement that you don't have to pay me the 1,000 zuz. The Ksuva is only worth 100 zuz. 100 zuz. So she's denying that there was ever payment made on the Ksuva. But she's saying of her own volition that even though it says I'm owed 1,000 zuz, you and I personally agree that the Ksuva is not going to be 1,000 zuz, it's going to be 1/10 of that, it's going to be 100 zuz. So what's the halacha? Mi amrinan hainu pogemes? Do we say that perhaps this is the same case as pogemes, as what we saw in the Mishnah, a woman who claims to receive partial payment? O dilma pogemes moja b'miksas, ha lo kamoja miksas. Rabbi say, or we could say, no, this is not Pogemus. Because in the case of Pogemus, what's happening, Rabosai? She's admitting that what? That she received partial payment. Here, she's not admitting that she received any payment. So Tashma, let's analyze this. Pocha says, Tifra Shelo B'Shvua. If a woman diminishes her ksuva, so she can go ahead and get paid without a shvuo. What's the case? Ketzad. Haisa ksuvasa elef zuz. If her ksuva was worth 1,000 zuz, v'amar lo hiskabalt ksuvaseich, and her husband claims, I paid you. V'yomeres lo hiskabalti. She says, I didn't go ahead and receive anything, but v'ina elamana. But you and I made a side agreement that the ksuva is only going to be worth 100 zuz. So what's the halacha? Nifras shalo b'ksuvasa. Shalo b'shvuo. So she's able to collect without a shvuo. Suppose I say the Braisa rules that in the case of Pocheses, she's able to go ahead and collect without a shvua. So the Gemara says, let's analyze this. B'may gavya, we'll say, what is the vehicle of her collection? Right? Meaning, what is the vehicle that entitles her to collect? So the Gemara says, b'may gavya, b'hai shtar, you're going to say that it's with this ksuvu, with the shtar. Hai shtar chaspa ba'amu. Shvua says she can't collect with the shtar. Why can't she collect with the shtar, we'll say? Because she's essentially saying that the shtar is irrelevant. Why is the shtar irrelevant? Because l'maisa, again, she's saying the shtar says 1,000. She's saying, well, no, we don't really agree on 1,000, we agree on 100. In which case, she's rendered that shtar meaningless. To which the Gemara says, Amar Rava Breid Rava Ba'omeres Amana Haisa Beini Lebeino, where she ultimately says, we had an agreement between one another, and Amana, I trust him, he trusts me, and therefore, even though we agreed on a lower amount for the ksuva, nevertheless, Halacha Lemaisa, Halacha Lemaisa, we are going to create an agreement between one another, and therefore, again, we're going to agree that the shtar should still be the vehicle of collection. So we'll say, even though, again, by her saying we agreed on a lower ksuva, to a certain degree, she's rendered the shtar meaningless, but by saying that there's an amono, there's a trust between me and her, and him agreeing that there's a trust between me and her that we can use the shtar, that allows the shtar to be the vehicle of collection. I will say, we'll stop over here. We'll pick up Amir Tashem at the two dots tomorrow.
In the case where she